It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, after widespread protests in Cuba last weekend, President Biden is facing pressure from members of Congress over how to respond. We'll look at what's driving the demonstrations, how the White House has reacted so far, and what it all means for the future of U.S.-Cuba relations. But first, are you ready for this?
There's been a lot of talk about this next song. Maybe too much talk. This song is not a rebel song. This song is Someday, Bloody Someday.
After more than a year off because of COVID-19, live concerts are back on here in Wisconsin. That one was actually in Red Rocks in Colorado. But still, you get the idea. Even though some music festivals have been canceled for a second straight year, the calendar is pretty full for the weeks and months ahead. Summerfest in Milwaukee is on later than usual, with Green Day, Miley Cyrus, ZZ Top, and oh so many others set to perform. And there are a couple events already this weekend, including Rockfest in Cadott, which actually gets underway today, and Country Thunder in Kenosha County. Plus, a number of big-name artists have concerts coming up throughout the rest of the year. Since it's been a while since thousands of music fans got together to sing along and cheer, we thought we'd get a refresher on good concert etiquette. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a live music show pet peeve you'd like to share? Is there something that other people do that really annoys you? What questions do you have about what to do at a concert? And have you been missing going out and seeing live music or playing live music? Or does your job have something to do with live performances? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Piet Levy is a music writer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Piet, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you're someone who goes to a show or two in normal times. Have you been missing getting out and seeing lots of live music?
Oh, I've been missing it tremendously. I was able to go to a concert the other week that I got to review for the Journal Sentinel, and reviewing two this month. August, it really kind of picks up, and September, it's going to be bonkers with Summerfest, with like 800 acts at Summerfest alone. But all the venues in Milwaukee are going to be full with stuff. They have a lot of time to make up for. So typically, it's just Summerfest is the only game in town, but this year, it's Summerfest, the Pabst Theater, the Rave, Pfizer Forum. They're all going to have things going on during Summerfest, so September is going to be really wild.
As these venues open back up and these festivals, is it going to look like it did in 2019, or are there still some precautions, or are we still figuring some of that out?
I think it's going to honestly look a lot like it did in 2019. That's what I'm hearing, for better or for worse, perhaps. A lot of the venues I talked to in Milwaukee, they're not going to be requiring masks. You know, everyone is basically encouraging, of course, if you haven't been vaccinated, please wear a mask for your safety and the safety of others. But they're not going to be requiring it. It's really a burden on venues to kind of try to figure out who's vaccinated, who's not vaccinated. It's just it's a big headache, frankly, to try to sort that out. So everyone, since the vaccination rates have been up and cases generally right now, fingers crossed, are pretty, much better than they've been. The idea is that it'll kind of look like it did. I think you'll probably see more like hand sanitation, hand sanitizer stations, things like that. I'm sure some concert goers will go in with masks. Socially distanced stuff, that's not going to happen. The concerts, venues and promoters can't make money with socially distant concerts. So all these concerts are going to be open at full capacity. So I think in a lot of ways, it'll look very similar to 2019.
Well, since it's been a while, Piet, you wrote a piece lately on how to behave at concerts. So what kind of, showgoer etiquette issues jumped to the top of your list?
Yeah, I put this together because it has been so long since we've seen concerts. I know so many people miss it, but there are things that people probably hated about concerts that we forgot about. And I'm just hoping everyone can kind of keep that in mind when they go back, because it's been so long since we've seen shows. And the most important thing is just to be respectful. And everyone's been missing out on it. And it'd be so great if everyone can go to a show and be respectful of each other. I think a lot of that kind of boils down to drinking, frankly. Obviously venues make their money from drinking. It's great to have a drink with a show. But I think the important thing, and a lot of the pet peeves I think a lot of people have, could be tied back to how much alcohol people consume. If you're consuming more alcohol, you may be a little more rude. It just may cause more issues. So I think that's kind of a thing that's related to a lot of the pet peeves I wrote about in the Journal Sentinel story is, have fun, drink if you wish, but make sure you're not drinking to the point where you kind of lose control like that and you're not being respectful to other showgoers and the artists and the staff.
Well, and Piet, you mentioned in your piece knowing somebody, and I've known people in this situation who went to a really memorable live show that they later couldn't remember because of how much they drank. Nobody wants that outcome, right?
Yeah, exactly. I remember talking to a guy who, you know, he tried to see Rolling Stones when they came to Summerfest in 2015, and he told me, like, I was just really drunk for all those early shows, and then this is the chance to finally see him, and he couldn't get that ticket because it sold out so fast. So, yeah, that's absolutely true. You know, and I think the issues I've run into at shows, and I think issues that a lot of people run into at shows, which we can kind of get into a little bit, I think a lot of those cases of people that caused those issues were probably drinking a bit too much. So, you know, have fun, drink, but please just try to keep it in moderation still.
Talking to Piet Levy, music writer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, looking at the return to live music here in Wisconsin and some live concert, live performance etiquette tips. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been hankering to get back to a live show over the last year plus? Is there one on your radar, a big festival or a small club? Famous act or local legend, let us know. 800-642-1234. And is there something that bugs you about behavior at live performances? Let us know about it at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Okay, Pia, there's a couple different scenarios for a show. A lot of times it's kind of a big floor and everybody's standing. But sometimes it's at a concert hall with the seats. And then the question is, how annoying is it if you stand up and dance or whatnot? What do you think?
Yeah, so my opinion, I've run into this many times. There was actually, I was reviewing Fleetwood Mac at Pfizer Forum a few years ago, and people in front of me were standing, so I had to stand to be able to review the show and to see the show, but then there were people behind me who couldn't see because I was standing. I was trying to, try to make my body kind of thinner than it could, you know, turn to my shoulder or something, so I'm kind of turning my head but not straight ahead. But nevertheless, they were having a big issue with it, and it got really ugly and belligerent, and security got involved. And again, this is probably a case where a guy was probably just drinking too much, frankly, who's yelling at us. My opinion is, like, if, you know, first of all, if you're going to be that upset about people standing in front of a show, try your best, you know, especially if it's like a show with seats, try your best to get a seat that where you won't have obstructed views. So, you know, I plan to hopefully take my kids once they're vaccinated to concerts again. Our plan is, like, we want to be like first row of section 200 or kind of one of the first rows in a balcony in a theater show. That's the plan. Like, if you're going to be that upset about it, try to get those kinds of seats. But artists want to see fans having fun, and people have been waiting a long time to dance and have fun. So I think it makes a lot of sense for people to be dancing at shows, and you should kind of expect that's going to happen. That said, if everyone in the room is sitting except you and it's a really quiet song, or it's like a, you know, 10-minute drum solo or whatever it is, like, you know, take a seat too. Like, keep that in mind. Like, make sure you're also a little bit aware of your surroundings so you can be respectful and kind of go with the flow.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Ellen is with us in Madison. Ellen, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to comment, long ago when I went to concerts, this was not a problem. But now you get people videotaping with their phones in front of you, and you can't see the show. And I've gone to many concerts, and it's just continual, and it's the biggest pet peeve I have. And I'm not even sure I want to go to concerts anymore because of it.
Wow. Ellen, if you could go to a concert, who would you want to see as things reopen?
Oh, well, Dave Matthews is my favorite, and I'll probably go see him again. But that's a problem at the Dave Matthews concerts for sure. But, yeah, that's probably who I'll go see first.
Ellen, thanks a lot. Well, if Ellen doesn't go, she can just watch somebody else's phone video of the show. But, Pia, you wrote about that, to phone or not to phone.
Yeah, that's also a huge pet peeve for a lot of people. I've gotten used to it because it's you just have to kind of accept that's going to happen. But I totally hear what Ellen is saying. I mean, it is extremely annoying. And my advice for people is, you know, enjoy the show there that you're watching. You know, don't just stare at it through your phone and just kind of engage with the show. I think it helps sometimes when artists also say something. I remember going to Billie Eilish at Summerfest a couple years ago, and she actually said, like, encourage people to put their phones away. And everyone did that. And there's been some shows where there's these pouches called Yonder Pouches where you're required to put your phones away and seal them up. That's mostly comedy shows, but, like, Jack White has done that too. I know a lot of fans, like, really love that, and it's weird to have your phone separated, but at the same time, it does make the experience really enjoyable. So my rule of thumb, my opinion is, like, you know, if you want to take a video, take a video. But do it, you know, just again, be mindful. Be mindful of others. Don't have it. Don't be live streaming. Don't be filming the whole show. You know, take it up for, you know, try to get the chorus for 30 seconds or the big finish to a song and then, you know, tuck it away, you know? And again, sometimes artists will encourage you to be like, get those phones out now or whatever. And, you know, then by all means, everyone go wild and crazy with your phones. But just be respectful of other people. Don't have it out the whole time.
Thanks a lot for that call, Ellen. Go back to a show. It's okay. We're talking about the return of live concerts and crowds and how we should act at those events. Piet Levy is with us, music writer at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have live show plans yourself for one of maybe the big festivals coming up or a smaller club near you? Have you missed going to shows? Have you missed playing at shows if you're a musician? And do you have a pet peeve to share about your fellow audience members? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're talking about the return of live music events in Wisconsin after they were put on hold for more than a year. Some big festivals coming up in the weeks and months ahead include Rockfest in Cadott, which starts today. Summerfest, of course, in Milwaukee. The Blue Ox Music Festival in Eau Claire. And we're getting a refresher on concert-going etiquette because it's been a while. Piet Levy is with us. He's a music writer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Is there something that has bugged you in concerts past about the behavior of fellow audience members, or should we just cut everybody some slack? And are you missing going to see live music? Are you looking forward to a show or many shows? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Piet, I'm thinking back to a show my band played at a party back in college, and there's a dramatic moment where we all stop in a song, and there's this silence. We listen back to a tape later, and there's our stop, and then blah, 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 everybody in the room just blah, blahing their way through it. And that is another concert etiquette thing you talk about, blah, blahing through the show.
Oh, that's the thing that does get to me. You know, we had a caller on, Ellen, who was talking about how she gets annoyed by phones, and a lot of people hate the phones. I get that. I get where you're coming from. The one thing that does get under my skin after just reviewing a lot of concerts for the Journal Sentinel are people talking through the music, especially like a quiet acoustic show. I reviewed a Neil Young solo appearance in Milwaukee early 2019. And man, there were just so many people who, again, I think they were, you know, they'd probably been drinking a bit too much, like yelling out song requests and just screaming just random things like during the songs, between the songs. It was just so aggravating, so distracting, and you can't really tune that out, I feel like, especially like at a quiet acoustic show. So that's really irritating. You know, if you go to a show, maybe you're not into the music, that's fine. That's my opinion. But during an acoustic set and you're in a theater, take it elsewhere, you know, or if you're in like a general admission show and you're seeing a band, you don't really like it, you know, try to just go back and talk more toward the bar and in the back where you're not kind of right in the middle of the action and potentially drowning out the music, especially during those quieter shows. Yeah, it's definitely something that people should keep in mind.
All right, now this is a sensitive topic, Piet. I've gotten the impression from some performers when they're here in Wisconsin that this show, like the show here, was uniquely bad when it came to talking and people shouting things out. Is this a Wisconsin problem, or did I have a bad sample here? I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, it's probably not a Wisconsin problem.
Probably not.
I remember I reviewed Aaron Lewis. He did an acoustic show in Milwaukee, also 2019. He threw like a massive fit at another show in Oklahoma about okay. it. So then I was like, oh, well, I better review him to see how he's going to do in Milwaukee and how Milwaukee will do. Because that got a lot of attention. So, and the audience there was pretty respectful. It got tense here and there, but pretty respectful. So I don't think, you know, I don't think we're just helpless and hopeless. I think people can be very respectful of the music here in Wisconsin. But, you know, again, I think it kind of boils down to be courteous to people around you, understand what show you're at. With Neil Young doing the solo thing I just talked about, those people must have, I think, again, were drinking too much and maybe expecting a rock show. It's a solo show. You can't have a big rock show, a big party rock show in that environment. You have to understand that. So just be respectful of the music, of the artists. The artists are not there to hear you scream out song requests. Just, you know, they're people that want to share their talent with you, and be respectful of that talent. Be respectful of people there to listen to that music.
Well, here's a related note. We had a caller at 800-642-1234. Tim in Avoca couldn't stay on the line, but he said he hates it when people around him sing at concerts. He says he pays to hear the band, not other people. What do you think? I mean, you love the band. You know all the words. You want to sing along. It seems kind of natural, and yet nobody wants to stand next to me singing along with the band. What do you think, Piet?
Oh, man, that is a tough one. That's a really tough one because, you know, if you love the show and you want to express it through singing, I get that you want to express it through singing. I think it's going to be similar to kind of the chatter conversation, similar to the phone stuff, similar to kind of a lot of these things is like, you know, or the standing or sitting debate. I think it's a matter of kind of seeing what's going on in the room and kind of seeing what's going on. If everyone is belting out this song, you know, then there's no hope. But if like no one's really belting it and you're the one guy doing it and you're terribly off key, then yeah, just kind of be a little bit mindful of that too. You know, people want to hear the performers. The other week I saw Silk Sonic, the Bruno Mars, Anderson .Paak duo. They did a performance on TV and they had the microphone out to the crowd and the crowd was singing the song. And it sounded dreadful. Like people don't want to really hear that. So sing if everyone's singing, if everyone's really celebrating, maybe the audience is, you know, if the artist is like, sing with us, you know, okay, sing with them. But otherwise, you know, just enjoy, let the professionals handle it.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Frank is with us now in Stevens Point. Frank, hi.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What'd you want to tell us about Frank?
Oh, I got an easy one for you. I took my daughter and friends. They're probably in college at IU. We went to a Billy Corgan concert. I think it was down in Tinley Park. And let's just say there weren't assigned seats, but a middle-aged woman sat directly behind us with about four or five teenage boys. And they were, let's say, from, I'm going to say they're from the country or maybe Kentucky. And they were spitting tobacco onto the floor as they were sitting right behind us, like, you know, gradually drooling on us. So I thought that was a pretty easy thing that's a not good thing to do.
Frank, thanks. I don't know if that's just concert etiquette, Piet. I mean, generally, I'm thinking spitting your tobacco, find someplace other than the floor, whatever, really, the social setting. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. Do not bring tobacco to spit at the show. That's absolutely, I completely agree with Frank. I mean, I've gone to some weird ones. I remember seeing a show at Summerfest, and you're at a picnic table, and we were eating, and a woman who was drinking too much, like got on the table, like was standing over our chicken tenders, mm-hmm. and was just like dancing with her, like her bare feet. And we were just like, do you mind while we eat our dinner not doing that? And she's like, is your name on this table? And I mean, what can you do? I just hope, obviously people are going to go out and party and they're probably going to party a little too hard. Please try not to party too hard. Enjoy the music, but not to, you know, don't party so hard that you do that you're spitting tobacco, that you're screaming out song requests, you know, like be respectful, please. Let's all enjoy the music together.
Frank, thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Piet Levy from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about the return to live concerts and how to behave and I guess how not to behave at said concerts. Okay, here's one that stymies me sometimes, Piet. Sometimes I like to be up close to the stage, but I'm not like a mosh pit kind of guy. I don't want to get hurt or nothing. Can you talk about the etiquette and the interface between the moshy area and that sort of blurry zone sometimes between people who just want to be kind of close to the stage?
Whew, yeah, that's tricky because you don't really know when that's going to kind of break out.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a really tricky one. I mean, I think you just have to kind of see where the crowd's going. And if it's going to get too intense for you, you gotta scoot out of there. I think one thing that's a little more clear cut for sure, and it's obvious from the beginning, is really don't like it when it's a general admission show. You've got people who have been waiting there maybe even for hours to get a good spot in front of the stage. And then right as like the lights come down or right before the show ends, you know, is about to start, you just have like really just an army of really tall dudes that just kind of try to muscle their way through and just kind of tackle people to get to the stage. I think that's really a really bad thing to do. Because, you know, then you're, you know, people are waiting there for a long time to have a good spot to be really close to the stage. And you're just, you know, you're being extremely rude, just cutting them off to like make your, because you think you're better than them. So my suggestion is, don't be that guy that does that. Wait until, yeah, if there's going to be moshing or whatever, there might be a natural exodus of people that leave. There's your opportunity to kind of go to the front, or maybe toward the end of the show when people are leaving to go home early. You know, that's a good opportunity when you see the floor kind of empty to be able to get a little bit closer. But don't just like muscle your way through like that.
All right, Pia, we've been talking about some of the knots and the negatives here, but I like live music. You love live music. Talk about just the joy of taking in a favorite artist or maybe a brand new artist to us live and in person.
Oh, it's such a wonderful thing. I feel so privileged I get to write about it. And I feel like, you know, especially in a really difficult time, music is a really great, it provides great healing, it provides great escape, it provides amazing unity. I just have so many countless amazing moments at concerts, whether it was on the clock for the Journal Sentinel or just with family and friends over the years. I mean, there's just not an experience like it. It's just so incredibly special. And this was so hard during this pandemic to not really be able to have that. In other tragedies, we've been able to turn to live music to kind of cope through that. And we couldn't do that because live music was a health hazard. So it's wonderful that we're getting to a point in our country where we can get out to music again and celebrate together again. And let's just do it respectfully. That's all I'm asking.
And briefly, Pat, what is next on your list of live shows to see chronologically?
Yeah, well, I'm going to be seeing Raul Alexander. Sorry. He's this kind of rising reggaeton star. He's going to be playing at the Rave July 25th. I'm really interested in him. And then I'll be at the Foo Fighters show. That'll be kind of the first huge concert in the state. That's going to be at the American Family Insurance Amphitheater in Milwaukee at the Summerfest grounds. They spent $52 million to renovate that venue. It's kind of their grand reopening. First major, major concert. Really excited to get to that one, too.
Piet, always good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That's Piet Levy, music writer from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We checked in with him on the Wisconsin concert scene this summer and got a refresher on how to act at live music events. Keep your feet out of my chicken tenders, I guess, is the main lesson here. Cuba says it's going to allow travelers to bring in food, medicine, and hygiene products into the country, at least for the time being. That announcement today comes after thousands of Cubans protested over the weekend, marking the most significant unrest there in decades. They're speaking out against chronic shortages of basic supplies, restrictions on civil liberties, and the communist regime's handling of COVID-19. President Biden reacted to the demonstrations at the White House on Monday.
The United States stands firmly with the people of Cuba as they assert their universal rights, and we call on the government of Cuba to refrain from violence or attempts to silence the voice of the people of Cuba.
Meanwhile, Cuban Americans in Florida have been urging Biden to do more to bring democracy to the island, with some encouraging the U.S. to lead an international push against the Cuban government. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What, if anything, do you want to see in the American response to these protests in Cuba? What questions do you have about the Cuban government, the protests, or U.S. policy toward the country? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Eduardo Gamarra is a professor of political science and founding director of Latino Public Opinion Forum at Florida International University. Eduardo, welcome back to Central Time. Eduardo, are you there?
I sure am.
There we are. Lost you for a sec. I think that was on our end. Thanks for joining us, Eduardo. We don't hear much usually about these kind of larger scale protests in Cuba. How big a development are these protests, Eduardo?
Well, I think if you put this in historical perspective, this is certainly something way beyond anything that Cuba has experienced since the 1959 revolution. There have been, instances of unrest. The most extreme before this was in 1994, during what was called the Cuban Special Period, in which basically there was a large demonstration in the right there by the boardwalk in Havana, and of course it was fairly easy for the regime to put down that demonstration, even though it did have significant repercussions. But this is very different. It's occurring at the time that the Cuban economy is in its worst shape ever, and that's already saying much. It's also occurring at a time when the pandemic in Cuba has reached extremes that really we don't really know about because of the nature of the island, the news coming from the island. But the pandemic appears to have been a very serious situation. And of course, this is also in the context of severe shortages of food, of medicine, and just about anything else. So it's a very significantly different moment from any earlier demonstration. And for some, it's a watershed. I think that we'll have to see. But at the moment, it is a very significant pattern, at least. It's not focalized in Havana as normally they have been. This is now spread over the entire country, even in small towns.
And looking at the protests there now, you mentioned shortages of a lot of goods, the impact of COVID-19. As I understand it, in large part, the Cuban economy depends on tourism, which, of course, was shut down all over the world by COVID-19. Is that part of the story here?
Yes. And I mean, this is part of a broader discussion on whether the embargo had an impact on Cuba or not. The reality is that Cuba had many sources of income. It was exporting medical, teams all over Latin America and elsewhere in exchange for revenue. It was, its tourism economy had largely been booming throughout the early part of the 20th century. And one of the things that most people don't really realize is the extent to which Venezuela had helped Cuba through this program called Petrocaribe, whereby they exported oil to Cuba, and Cuba could then resell on the international market for revenue, and of course also to supply itself with very, very cheap oil. So all of these things that kept the economy alive today are not functioning. And the regime, of course, has also been, affected by some of the measures that the Trump administration took at the very end. One of the most important, and perhaps the one area that's affecting the people of Cuba directly is the remittances. Depending on what economists you talk to, but somewhere between $2 and $3 billion a year are sent to Cuba by Cubans abroad.
We're talking to Eduardo Gamarra from Florida International University, looking at protests in Cuba, possible U.S. responses. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Eduardo, how much of this is related to generational change? The generations that experienced the revolution personally, not many of them with us anymore. The Castro brothers who obtained some of their, I guess, authority, their charisma from their experience there. They're not in charge anymore. How much of this is just the fading memory of the initial revolution?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is. I mean, it's quite interesting to see that, yesterday and the day before, the leadership, the new leadership of Cuba with President Díaz-Canel, paraded the old guard, the three remaining of the old guard, including Raul Castro himself. These individuals were paraded sort of to bring back the collective memory of what the Great Revolution was about. But I think there's really a couple of things here that need to be emphasized. First, that Cuba, in the opening that occurred under the Obama administration, began to finally enjoy the benefits of the technological revolution that the rest of us have been enjoying, and particularly internet and access to cell phones. And that, I think we'll know later, of course, to what extent this is true, but it appears like that has been really a game changer. Because no longer is information just filtered through the propaganda of the state, but now it goes, directly to YouTube, and YouTubers, as they're called in Cuba, are famous worldwide, as are people on Instagram and TikTok, and of course on Twitter and so on. So So this technological revolution has given voice especially to a very young generation, and a young generation that is, you know, that is rapping and that is, you know, involved it's sort of the artists, in fact, that were at the forefront of this revolt. And they're young people. They're young people who you know, weren't around, of course, in the late 1950s, and who basically see in the revolution something that is maybe, you know, archaic, maybe even, you know, certainly something that's not meeting their expectations. And so in some measure, the same way that, you know, generations of young people have done in the past everywhere, you know, they're disenchanted with the regime and they don't have the respect for the institutions of the revolution that their parents and their grandparents did, right? And they've also lost something probably more important. They've lost fear, right? And that is probably what the regime is really, you know, was really surprised that, you know, that just the threat of repression before was enough to put down, you know, any kind of revolt. This weekend was really phenomenal in that sense because of the breadth and scope of this demonstration.
And now here, President Biden in the White House trying to figure out how to respond. Can you talk about the position the Biden administration is in, their range of options?
Yeah, the Biden administration, you know, let me start with a critical point of view. I think they've waited too long to define their policy toward Cuba, right? They essentially said that they would not go back to the Obama-style wide opening, right? But that they would resume people-to-people contacts. And, you know, and in the context that I just described, maybe, you know, this administration, given all of its worldwide and domestic challenges, maybe just put Cuba on the back burner, hoping that nothing would happen. And I think they're in some measure now looking for a way to respond. And the president, I think, has made the correct statement, which was to say, we stand with the people of Cuba in this moment of the pandemic and in this moment in which they're being repressed. I think that's the great statement. At the same time, however, Secretary of Homeland Security Mayorkas made a statement that was quite controversial, at least down here in Florida. And that is that, the message was, you know, to any Cuban and any Haitian, you know, don't come to the United States because we will send you back home. And so that, you know, that message is really one that, again, has historical roots. It's the fear of another Mariel exodus, as in 1990, or of an exodus as occurred in the mid-1990s. And so I think the administration is really right now looking for the correct response. And I think, you know, the administration is going to have to figure this out very quickly and perhaps think about more how does it command an international coalition responding to Cuba rather than defining its policy based on South Florida politics.
We're taking a look at the protests in Cuba and what they mean for America's policies toward the country. Eduardo Gamarra is with us, political science professor and founding director of the Latino Public Opinion Forum at Florida International University. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to this weekend's protests in Cuba? What do you want to see from President Biden in response? Should the U.S. try to work with international partners to call for change in Cuba, or is what's happening there not our deal? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. The conversation continues coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about the protests in Cuba and Miami against the island's communist regime and how the U.S. might respond. Eduardo Gamarra is our guest, professor of political science at Florida International University. You can join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. I want to give a listen to Florida Senator, Republican and Cuban-American Marco Rubio in an interview on Fox earlier this week, talking about what he wants to see from the Biden administration.
But I think long-term is something we've been pushing for a long time. We're making progress on it when Trump was in office, and that is to provide internet access, satellite internet access, so Cubans don't have to go through the lines and the cables that the Cuban government can shut on and off, but can actually use satellite to communicate to the world and to each other. That'll take some time, but that should be our number one priority right now in terms of what we can do to help the people of Cuba.
That's kind of a longer term, a part of an answer or response here, Eduardo. But what do you think of that idea, trying to provide, you were talking about the impact of internet and cell phones, trying to provide independent access to that sort of thing?
Well, in some measure, it's become a very significant Republican talking point. The governor of Florida has been saying this now, with a great deal of confidence that Florida ought to be at the forefront of trying to, in the context that we are right now, providing internet access to Cuba through satellite. Now, I understand that is possible, but it takes a lot more than wishing it to be so, and it involves not just negotiating with the Democrats in Congress. It really involves some kinds of conversations with satellite providers and with companies that are involved in providing internet and so on. And right now in Cuba, the only company that provides the internet access is the Cuban government. So it's easier said than done. And right now at the moment, it's just a talking point, and I think it's a talking point that the Republicans are using to say, look, we really want this, but the Democrats are blocking it. And frankly, as I said, it's just a talking point. It's not anything that's feasible and certainly nothing that can be done overnight.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Tom is with us in Waupaca. Tom, hi.
Good afternoon. I gave up smoking cigars, but especially when I smoked cigars, I wished we traded with Cuba. But I'm still mystified as to why we can trade with China and borrow money from China, and we trade with Russia, but we won't trade with Cuba 90 miles off our coast. I think it would help the people there if we entered a free trade agreement with them. And the elites in Cuba, they're fine anyway, but I think it would help the common people if we could have free trade.
Tom, thanks a lot for the call. Eduardo, a long debated subject, the impact of the embargo, why it's there. Can you, what do you think of Tom's question?
It's a very good question. And frankly, I think, most of my academic colleagues would agree with, the embargo has not had the desired impact in 62 years of regime change. And so, if that was the objective, it hasn't worked. At the same time, however, I think, it's rather disingenuous most of the time to argue that the embargo is in place. The embargo is in place only, if it is an embargo, it has a lot of holes in it, because the U.S. Actually trades with Cuba, and we have a significant amount of trade with Cuba. We also have, as I was talking about, the remittances, about $3 billion a year of remittances. If this was a full embargo, I think, maybe remittances would be the first place, which is actually what Trump tried to do. Moreover, there have been extraterritoriality clauses in the embargo, tightened by the Helms-Burton Act of 1997, And extraterritoriality has been very difficult because, we can't force the Spanish not to invest in the tourism sector. We certainly can't prevent the Chinese. We weren't able to prevent the Brazilians from engaging there. We certainly can't prevent the Russians from. So part of the problem with the embargo logic is that it has helped strengthen the extremes on both sides. It's helped the government of Cuba argue that because of the embargo, they are in such a terrible situation, and which, that kind of clouds or gives credence to this idea that it's a U.S. imposition, when in fact, most of their problems are the Soviet Union no longer subsidizes their economy, the Venezuelans no longer do, and they've mismanaged their economy for years. And then on the other side, here in Florida, especially, you know, on some of the more extreme sectors of our community, who argue for the strengthening of the embargo, you know, in fact, you know, their logic is also, in my view, flawed, because we know that even strengthening it is not going to affect a regime change in the short term.
Thanks for the call, Tom. We'll go to Phil now in Kingston. Phil, hello.
Hello, thank you. I was wondering, my family's from Portugal, and my dad, my cousin, used to tell me about the terrible days with the dictatorship from before in the early 70s from President Salazar and his tyrannical rule and so forth. I was wondering if it's possible that America could give aid to Cuba through the stipulation that it would have to be given only to the people, only because I was remembering my family telling me about the Bolivarian coup in 1975, where the people uprose and removed President Salazar and that dictatorship. And also there was a Time magazine article how there was something similar that happened to Poland with Perestroika, and how help with President Reagan behind the scenes, along with even with the Vatican, and helping the Poland get its freedom. So this is, to me, a slight comparison to Portugal, what it was going through.
Phil, thanks a lot. Phil asked a lot there, Eduardo. We just have a minute or so. Can you talk about what you see maybe as a path to overthrowing this government, as Phil says, hopefully bloodlessly?
Well, you know, the unfortunate thing about Cuba is that it has had a very, very repressive regime for now 62 years. And there is no opposition there, you know, that can organize freely and that can in some measure even come together to try to overthrow. They have no access to arms. They have no access to, you know, even as other countries that aren't an island. You know, you might even look at this as kind of an island that, you know, that favors the imposition of this dictatorship. So I don't see the opposition internally capable enough to organize and to overthrow the regime, right? Or to what we saw this weekend is the closest, I think. The other thing which is important is that, you know, it seems to me that this is the first time that the international community perhaps might be mobilized around something related to forcing the Cuban government to be a little bit more, you know, to open up a little bit. But the Cuban response has really been very Soviet style, right? They have, you know, they've arrested, you know, who knows what the actual number is, but certainly hundreds by now. And so it seems that over the course of the next few weeks, it's going to be more repression, not less repression.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to our guest, Eduardo Gamarra from Florida International University, looking at the latest news from Cuba.